Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nartrees Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. The Lowland Clearance of Scotland's Silent Revolution, 1760-1830, is a historical study of one of the least publicly remembered transformations in modern Scottish history. Associated with Peter Aitchison and Andrew Castle in published editions, the book examines how Lowland Scotland was reshaped during the Age of Agricultural Improvement, when older communal and tenant-based farming systems gave way to enclosed, commercially managed estates. Its subject is not only farming technique, but the social consequences of economic modernization, the removal or marginalization of cottars, small tenants, and rural families whose livelihoods depended on customary access to land. Unlike many accounts centered on the more famous Highland clearances, this book focuses on the southern and eastern lowlands, where change was often less spectacular but deeply consequential. Its purpose is to recover a hidden process of displacement, connect it to the Scottish agricultural revolution, and show how rural upheaval helped feed urban growth. Industrial labor markets, and migration beyond Scotland. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, the Lowland clearances as a quieter counterpart to the Highland clearances. The book's central importance lies in shifting attention from the dramatic and better-known Highland clearances to the Lowland experience of dispossession. In popular memory, clearance is often associated with Gaelic-speaking communities, sheep farming, clan dissolution, and mass immigration from the Highlands. The Lowland process was different in form and public visibility, but it was not minor. It unfolded through estate improvement, lease restructuring, farm consolidation, enclosure, and the erosion of customary rural tenures. And because it often occurred through legal contracts, economic pressure, and gradual reorganization rather than through highly visible episodes of eviction, it could appear less violent while still transforming communities. The phrase "silent revolution" captures this combination of scale and relative invisibility. The book therefore challenges a narrow geography of Scottish clearance and argues that modernization in the lowlands also produced displacement, dependency, and social rupture. This reframing matters because it places lowland agricultural change within the same broad historical problem as the Highland clearances who benefited from improvement. Who paid its costs, and how rural people were absorbed into a new economic order. Secondly, agricultural improvement replaced customary farming with commercial estate management. A major theme of the book is the relationship between agricultural improvement and social restructuring. In Lowland Scotland, older systems of farming had relied on small holdings, shared use of land, customary arrangements, and forms of subsistence that tied families to particular places over generations. From the later 18th century, landowners and improving tenants increasingly pursued higher productivity through enclosure, drainage, crop rotation, selective breeding, larger farms, and more formalized leases. These changes could raise output and align lowland agriculture with the wider European movement toward commercial farming. But they also made many traditional rural roles economically redundant. Cottars, subnants, and small-scale occupiers were especially vulnerable because their security often depended on custom rather than strong legal title. The book treats improvement as a practical mechanism of transformation, not merely an ideology. New methods of land management required capital, planning, and consolidated control, which favored landlords and wealthier tenants. The consequence was a countryside organized less around local subsistence and more around profitability, market access, and disciplined labor. Thirdly, displacement redirected rural populations toward towns, industry, and migration. The lowland clearances were not only a change in land use, they were also a demographic redirection. As small tenants and cottars lost access to land or found their traditional livelihoods unsustainable, many moved toward expanding industrial centers such as Glasgow and Edinburgh to northern England or overseas. Others remained in rural areas but under altered conditions, becoming wage laborers rather than semi-independent occupiers. The book's significance comes from connecting estate-level agricultural decisions to Scotland's broader transition into an industrial society. Rural displacement helped create a labor supply for towns, mines, mills, building trades, and service work. This movement should not be understood simply as voluntary mobility in response to opportunity. For many families, migration followed the narrowing of viable choices in the countryside. The loss of land meant the loss of food security, household autonomy, and inherited patterns of work. By tracing this connection, the book shows that urban and industrial growth was partly built on rural dislocation. The modern Scottish economy did not emerge only through innovation in cities, it also emerged through the reorganization of the countryside. Fourthly, the book presents landlords and tenants within a complex moral economy. Rather than reducing the lowland clearances to a simple conflict between cruel landlords and helpless tenants, the book is best understood as examining a more complex moral and economic landscape. Landowners often justified change through the language of improvement, efficiency, national progress, and better agricultural returns. Wealthier tenants could also support reform, since larger leases and improved farms created opportunities for profit. At the same time, rural families who depended on customary access to land experienced these policies as dispossession, even when the process followed legal norms of the period. This tension is central to the book's value. It asks readers to consider how legally sanctioned modernization can still produce severe social harm. The absence of a single villain does not reduce the consequences. It instead reveals how structural change works through institutions, incentives, and accepted assumptions about property. The book therefore contributes to debates about land ownership, rural obligation, and historical responsibility. It shows that clearance was not only an event, but a system of decisions that redefined whose claims to land counted as legitimate. Lastly, recovering the lowland clearances changes the memory of modern Scotland. The book's recovery of the lowland clearances has implications beyond agricultural history. It changes how readers understand the formation of modern Scotland by showing that the lowlands, often associated with progress, commerce, education, and industry, also experienced profound rural upheaval. The traditional narrative of Scottish modernization can make agricultural improvement appear as a straightforward success story: higher productivity, better techniques, and stronger integration into national markets. This book complicates that picture by foregrounding the communities displaced or transformed by those gains. It also helps explain why the memory of lowland clearance has been weaker than that of highland clearance. Lowland migrants were often absorbed into towns or wage labor systems, rather than remembered as part of a distinct cultural catastrophe. Their experience was dispersed across factories, urban neighborhoods, estate villages, and emigrant routes. By bringing this history into focus, the book contributes to current discussions of land reform, rural depopulation, and the long-term social cost of economic development. It reminds readers that modernization can create prosperity while erasing older forms of belonging. In conclusion, The Lowland Clearances: Scotland's Silent Revolution, 1760-1830, is best suited to readers interested in Scottish history, agricultural transformation, land ownership, rural society, and the social origins of industrialization. It will be especially useful for those who know the Highland Clearances, but want a fuller account of how clearance and improvement affected other regions of Scotland. Students and general readers can gain a clearer understanding of how economic modernization operates at ground level through leases, farm consolidation, enclosure, labor change, and migration, rather than only through dramatic political events. Its intellectual benefit is that it links rural history with urban and industrial development, showing that Scotland's modern economy was shaped by both innovation and dispossession. Compared with broader histories of Scotland or books focused on the Highlands, it stands out because of its regional emphasis and its attention to a less visible process. It does not rely on a simple narrative of progress or victimhood. Instead, it highlights the uneasy relationship between productivity and social cost. For readers concerned with contemporary debates about land reform, rural depopulation, and historical memory, the book offers a historically grounded framework for thinking about who gains and who loses when land is reorganized for profit. If you would like to support Peter Aitchison, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.